If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
When you work with people, I mean, you do take the risk, right? You take the risk that some things may not get done right. Maybe it might get messed up. That's fine. I mean, part of that is a learning experience. I think what's super important for that is internally what we have a lot of repetitive sort of retrospectives.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Kevin Harris is the co-founder at InvestNext, a software that modernizes the way real estate syndicators raise and manage capital. Prior to founding InvestNext, he was employee number two at the College Career Network startup Handshake, where he contributed to initial product development efforts. Handshake is currently valued at over $400 million and is the leading college-to-career recruiting platform in the nation. Today, Kevin is honored to be part of the seasoned team of software engineers and real estate professionals that are building the InvestNext platform, which to date is managing 320-plus syndicators and over $1 billion in capital. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me out, Sam.
Absolutely, man. The pleasure is all mine. You know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how'd you get there? We kind of, I think, got that through your bio a little bit, but really just kind of, you know, want to hear your story. You know, what you guys are doing, what you guys are seeing across InvestNext. You know, this is a short podcast, so I got a lot of questions for you, but really the floor is yours to take this where you want. So let's kick it off and really maybe hear the first little bit about InvestNext, then we'll go from there.
Yeah, yes, for sure. Yeah. So, you know, I'll mention InvestNext is a real estate syndication platform. So the idea here is that if you're a sponsor going out to raise capital from your investors, it's really going to be that end-to-end platform to go out, raise the capital, manage the investors, do the downstream logistics of reporting, paying out distributions, all that stuff. So just provide the professional storefront for your investors. And again, kind of provide that sort of one hub sort of for yourself and your partners that you're working on deals with. So that's kind of the summary of InvestNext. Where we got started, yeah, so it was definitely a journey. So we got started it's been probably close to five or so years ago. And we built initially a tool for real estate investment firms at the institutional level. So these were groups that were handling, I mean, everything from commingled funds, you know, doing some pretty sizable deals, handling thousands of investors across their portfolio. So it was definitely purpose built for kind of a specific firm. But eventually we kind of got this, enough people kind of started hearing about it. And so they're saying, hey, can we use something like this? Because like we have it, ourselves have our group, we have our investors raising capital along the way. So that was kind of the light bulb moment for us, is realizing that, yeah, the industry by and large is still on Excel. It's still paper driven. It's extremely manual. And you know, it seems a bit of a black box. So we looked at this space and we saw that, yeah, I mean, there's a massive gap in here. There's people, entrepreneurs, small groups that are going out raising capital, and we want to scale that tool down and provide that as an open access to, again, syndicators across the board. So that's a little bit of kind of where we came from and where we're at today.
Right, right. How many people are on your team now?
So now we have 9 people on the product team specifically. So that's engineers, that's designers, and people that are completely focused on rolling out the platform and the product. And across the board, I mean, we have people on the West Coast as well as East Coast. And then, but our heart kind of, we always say it's Detroit. So that's where we got started. We came to the city. We saw this city that was kind of turning around. We saw a lot of work happening in the real estate market in the local area. And that was kind of a bit of an inspiration as to how we got founded and sort of the larger effort we're trying to achieve. So.
Gotcha. Gotcha. What has that process been like growing your team?
Yeah. So first of all, it's super exciting. It's a transition from thinking very tactically in a sense of, you know, your day-to-day, what you're working on. So when you're very early on, you're very, you know, you're thinking about all the things that have to get done. And it's just the list is endless, right? And you're really trying to achieve a mission. But when you start to scale a team, it's very much about shifting from a tactical point of view to more kind of strategic, in the sense that, okay, you know, now we have more people that can contribute to this cause. How do we effectively delegate? How do we effectively kind of distribute the workload? So again, it's super exciting, but you know, there's obviously kind of a growing kind of pain to that, but that's kind of the exciting part of the growth. So.
Right, right. And you being a co-founder, is that kind of your, have you taken that role of more strategy and less of the tactical implementation?
Yeah, I mean, if you speak to anybody on the team, I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely like certainly the person that's willing to be like scrubbing the floor on the deck on the ship, and that's totally fine. But like, that's definitely what kind of where my position has moved is really making sure that everybody has the capable tools to do what they're doing, what they have to do day to day. But yeah, it's definitely shifted to that.
Right. Was that a hard transition for you?
I think I would say it's challenging in the sense that I'm very much a product person and very much into the nuts and bolts of building and designing product. And so at some point you realize that, you know, I can definitely be in the wormhole of building something, or I can empower people on my team to actually probably do a much better job than I would myself. So I think that was the struggle, is like kind of you have this baby that you've been working on for a long time, but giving that ownership was super enlightening for me, because it's just, you realize that, yeah, at the end of the day, it's just what the output is just so much better than you could ever imagine on your own. So.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. How, when you took those brought those team members on, and I mean, initially I would assume you were just assigning tasks to people, right? Like, hey, this is your department. This is what you're doing. But what were some of how did you develop your KPIs for those new positions that you were filling?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. You know, when we were thinking about what it means to bring on people, it's very different sort of across different life cycles of a company. This is kind of a broader point, but like I've in a previous life, I've worked at much larger companies and corporate America. I mean, in there, it's just, you know, you're kind of a cog in the wheel and very defined structures. Again, when you find yourself on the entrepreneurial route, you're starting to work with people. Hiring is extremely, extremely important in the sense that you don't necessarily want to bring on workhorses at that stage. You really want to bring on people that can really own something. And it's not necessarily delegation in the sense that you're assigning tasks. It's more around, hey, this is a core problem we're trying to solve. Take it and run with it. You own it. And that's the empowering part of that stuff. So it's really shifting the mindset from like kind of being the taskmaster to more kind of empowerment of problem solving. So.
Right, right. And I think one of the things that people commonly run into is when you're shifting from that, because who said it? It was Phil Knight. I don't know if you read Shoe Dog.
Yeah.
Great book. But in the book, he said, you know, he would tell people what, not how.
Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, and I can't remember who came out with the book now. There's a new book out that's kind of all the rage, that it's who, not how, same idea. But, you know, you tell them what you want done, not how to do it, or this is what the problem is. How do we solve that and put the ball in their court? But I think one of the things that maybe, and I'm asking this question, not telling, is, you know, when you do that, though, maybe they don't produce the results that you were expecting or wanted. Have you run into that where you go, hang on, timeout, we're misfocusing, or when you refocus, does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, that's kind of one part talent of understanding kind of the partner or the individual that you're kind of bringing on. And, you know, you get a sense of, you know, how tactically focused someone is. And it's, again, everybody's going to have a different role at each stage of a company. I mean, and it's certain points of a cycle of a company's growth. It's going to be for someone that, you know, they're either going to want it or they're not. And so when you work with people, I mean, you do take the risk, right? You take the risk that some things may not get done right. Maybe you might get messed up. That's fine. I mean, part of that is a learning experience. I think what's super important for that is internally what we call, we have a lot of repetitive sort of retrospectives. And that's really the ability for us to come together on a very regular cadence. I mean, at the longest is a weekly cadence. And that's where we meet as team members and say, hey, what went well last week? What didn't go so well? And that's kind of becomes more of like that check-in of saying, hey, are we actually headed in our respective roles? Are we headed in that right direction? So that's where the entire team can come together and provide that feedback for everybody. So that's super important for us.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an amazing short feedback loop. You're not rewinding time over 30 days going, okay, so what happened April 1st? You're going back 7 days and saying, all right. I mean, that makes course corrections a lot easier, I would think.
Yeah. And kind of on that note, you know, we're very kind of, you know, you might call it nerdy about our kind of our KPIs and how we kind of track our statuses, but we actually implement pretty well known system, at least kind of in the tech world. It's called OKRs, objectives and key results. So the concept there is that, you know, you go out with sort of this big, hairy, audacious goal, right? So you have, hey, we're going to do X, Y, Z by the end of the month or by the end of the quarter. And so that's kind of that goal everyone's kind of achieving towards. And then under that, we have some metrics that we're trying to achieve for that. So it's like, you know, maybe the first metric is we're going to move from X to Y. And so we have some very sort of defined metrics of how we're meeting that. So throughout this process, we were constantly looking at the overarching goal, what we're doing, those key results as they relate to kind of everybody. It's not telling what we have to get done in the quarter. It's just saying we're trying to achieve these metrics. And so that kind of gives us the flexibility to kind of adjust. If we're trying something 1 week or a couple of weeks, it's not working, okay, readjust. We know that we're trying to reach that specific metric. So it's kind of a more flexible planning tool. But yeah, I definitely encourage, if you haven't looked at its objectives and key results, it's a pretty cool system. It's nothing like revolutionary. It's really like, I think most people think about these things, but it just frames it in a nice perspective. So
Right. No, absolutely. And this is a rabbit hole I didn't intend on going down, but I think it's fascinating, because this is information that anybody in any business, you know, needs to pay attention to, is how you're building your team, who you're bringing on, what those KPIs or OKRs in your case look like, you know, mistakes made along the way, and, you know, how to course correct along that journey, I think is really,
yeah.
So that's super fascinating. I want to kind of dig in, you know, you guys have, and I don't know how to say this, because this might come across like you're digging in everybody's information, but you're not. But you guys do kind of have the back end, behind the scenes view of what the kind of industry trends are, and where you, how you see deals getting structured, and how you see just, you know, the market, I guess, sentiment in general. Can you talk to us, you know, obviously without disclosing information of anything or any deal in particular, but just kind of general where you see things are today and how they've been affected over the last year and where you might see them going.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll definitely tell you, since day one, since we got started, yeah, you know, I kind of mentioned earlier that we definitely work with some fantastic institutions, pretty big partners. They've doing some pretty sizable deals, and that's kind of been the history of real estate, right? When we think about commercial real estate investing, it's, you know, sort of the behemoth firms going out there doing these big deals. And we've seen, I mean, in the time frame, we've seen quite an incredible shift around a lot of, I mean, call it individuals, entrepreneurs, partnerships going out, partnering together to do deals. And that's really the thing that's becoming really obvious to us, is that we're seeing a lot of sort of, call them, syndications that are driven by single person, multiple person teams. And that's becoming, part of that is just the technology is becoming a lot more available for groups to go out and do these deals that they historically couldn't have done that. So it's just the support around that. And so that's where you start to see things like, you know, sponsors that are partnering with other sponsors, they're leveraging their respective investor networks to go out, raise capital, do bigger deals. And so we kind of look at what we're seeing forthcoming is real estate is very much becoming, kind of call it, decentralized, in the sense that now you have, you know, where historically you had big firms entering certain markets, people that are living in those markets can actually take on those opportunities. They can leverage, again, retail investors, local capital to actually contribute and build out their portfolio. So that's something that we're seeing. It's very much becoming a democratized space, and that's kind of aligning towards our goal to what we're trying to do. So.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting. And certainly, you know, I've seen a lot of that and been part of that, you know, that movement as well, you know, where we come on and, you know, several of us that know each other well, take down a deal that otherwise maybe we couldn't have taken down on our own. How are you guys supporting that?
Yeah. So, I mean, our mantra internally, and even when we talk to customers, it's, again, we're constantly saying, I mean, we're democratizing access to this space, right? And the way we do that is, our goal is to reduce all friction across the board for someone to, whether they're investing for the first time, maybe as a passive investor, you know, they just maybe new to the game, they have sort of capital on the side, they want to put that to work. So providing that streamlined experience for the actual investor to invest, view the actual opportunities, subscribe, sign documents, fund their actual investment. But then on the flip side of that, as a syndicator, you're saying, hey, you know, I want to get more serious about this. I want to get into the game, but I also want to provide that professional storefront to my investors. I want to provide that trust with my partners. So again, that's everything from providing all the tooling for presenting your offerings, your actual investment opportunities. And then as well with that is, you know, if you're partnering with co-sponsors, inviting them into your workspace to collaborate with your respective investors and then go out and do the bigger deal. So it's really meant to kind of house that entire syndication lifecycle.
Got it. Yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. Is there anything else that you guys are seeing as trends that is worth noting?
We're seeing an uptick in, certainly, like, international investors are becoming something that's, I mean, the borders are being certainly kind of lowered. We're definitely seeing more groups that are kind of working cross-border, bringing in either investors from outside or even just even looking at deals outside of, like, the U.S. in general. So that's been something we've noticed even kind of in more recent months. I think that's, we call it the general trend of, you know, globalization, the fact that, you know, it is easier to do business across borders. So that's something that we're really interested in, about just the fact that we can provide transactions across countries, borders, and so forth. But that's one thing. I'm trying to think of any other kind of key trends that we're seeing across the board. You know, when we went into COVID, you know, we thought the deals were maybe going to go down. We were saying, okay, what's going to happen when this thing's hit? Surprisingly, we actually saw quite a jump in volume. We actually saw a lot of people that made, I mean, first of all, the whole remote work environment. I mean, we saw people collaborating across the board. That did not slow down any progress. But in addition to that, it's the fact that there was actually kind of a major inflection point for a lot of people in their careers. I mean, we talked to customers every day that they said, look, like a year ago, I was working at my corporate job, started syndicating on the side. Like I actually had the bandwidth to kind of take my 9-to-5, limit that commitment there, and actually start working on my syndication on the side. So we saw a lot of people coming from that route and really, I mean, full time to the syndication, to real estate investing. And that became kind of their major career shift. So I think partially because a lot of people were getting laid off, but also just people had a chance to actually kind of step back and say, hey, what are, you know, I do have bandwidth in my availability. What's my next career jump? So it's
another career, right. So that's interesting. I'm curious, you know, and maybe you guys don't get into the weeds on this, but yet we, you know, I'm a subscriber to InvestNext. We use it to make distributions. We use it. I mean, you see all the terms of the deals because it's right there in the back end. Have you seen terms shift in any meaningful way from maybe 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah. So we're starting to see a lot more, call it younger or kind of like impact investors. So, you know, before, you know, you kind of had your general structure. You go out, you do the deal. It's pretty transactional, right? You're going to kind of bring the property back up. You're going to maybe do a sell off in like X number of years, return back to your investors. So we're starting to see that incentive kind of changing. So investors, at least again, across sort of the general board that we've seen, is they're actually kind of looking at the longer term, and we're actually starting to see more regionalized efforts. So to say, and this, I'll give you an example, like in Detroit, we see a lot of groups that are totally focused on sort of rejuvenating certain portions of the city. And they're actually specifically bringing in investors that are actually part of that community, part of the local area. So they don't feel the pressure to necessarily, again, you know, return something in a very constrained time frame. They understand that they're not only investing in an asset that's going to return value to them, but also they're kind of looking at the impact that's having on their own community. So we're starting to kind of see sort of, again, people that are operating in a specific market, they're actually accessing investors in that market. And that's really a huge buy-in for those investors as well. So it's just kind of an easier sell for them.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting because the mistake I think a lot of us syndicators make is that we assume that people invest based upon the return profile, right? And I hear it over and over where it's like, you know, obviously the most important thing is that you know, like, and trust people you're investing with. But what you're telling me is that beyond the return profile of or the risk profile of a particular deal, people are then taking on longer time horizons because of the impact aspect of the deal.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, certainly kind of a generational shift in kind of how we're thinking about even investing as a whole. I mean, you know, love them or hate them, right? You kind of look at the analogy of like how the whole thing that happened with like Robin Hood and all that craziness, where now you had a bunch of like, I mean, now you have mainstream America kind of coming up against whatever, call it institutions, right? It's like, and these are people that are like, hey, like I really like this product, and I'm going to, not to make a comparison, but like there is certainly a shift in the mentality of what investing means. And again, there is obviously that the main focus around, you know, the returns and that how, you know, how you build wealth as an individual and generational wealth. But there is an element of understanding what that asset means, right? When we think about real estate, you know, we kind of think of it in a box, right? It's an investment that returns value to investors. But it's now starting to take the form of, hey, this is a living investment. I mean, people live, people work. These are this is the infrastructure of life, right? So there's really a kind of a holistic view on what you're actually getting involved in. And so I think that people feel good about that. They understand, hey, this is great. We're seeing a lot, you know, thriving communities. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that emphasis in the future too.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin, this has been great. Certainly appreciate it. Let's jump here into the final four. The first question is this: what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
I would say, you kind of nailed it earlier, it's really partnering with people you trust, in the sense that, you know, what's there's definitely the quantitative side of things. There's obviously, you know, the evaluation on that side, but also just kind of the general mission around what they're doing. So just being mindful of that is super important. So that would be kind of the advice there.
Gotcha. Second question is this: when it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
Personally, investing in myself, whole COVID, you know, remote work from home can definitely make you very stale and, you know, just sort of sedentary. So I'm very focused on, you know, I try to go to the gym, just kind of get just physically active just to get the day going. So that's just helped me a lot psychologically and just physically. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. That's great. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Yeah, we always kind of point back to Detroit. So again, people kind of maybe have heard it in passing or, you know, but Detroit's obviously been historically has seen some pretty rough times. We ourselves have committed sort of the core group to giving back to the community, whether that's again through charity or even just donating our time locally when we can. But it's also just building the actual business and the core team here. And that's kind of been part of a larger movement. A lot of tech companies have been moving here in the last few years. So we're just really trying to revitalize that. And again, just that's how we give back. So.
Hey, no, that's great, man. Kevin, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah. So reach me directly at kevin@investnext.com. That's my direct email. And of course, you can always hop on to investnext.com and kind of learn more about us there.
Awesome. Kevin, thanks so much for your time. Certainly appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.